The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of Spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
It's a good show.
Hey everyone, just want to thank you for listening to the podcast. If you like the podcast and you like the sort of thing we're doing, we just launched a new Patreon page at patreon.com/neverseenit. That is patreon.com/neverseenit. We're going to be posting new weekly bonus episodes up there that are some reads with some friends, some script reading, some fan scripts. I'm also going to be releasing the rest of Faking a Murderer. So if you are a fan of our bonus episode, Faking a Murderer, it will be released over time on the Patreon page as well. And we will have video from live shows, video from in the studio. We're going to try and have some fun and make it a little unique. And we'd really appreciate it if you supported us over there at patreon.com/neverseenit. It would mean a lot and it would help us out greatly. Thank you.
In a world where every conversation is about what movie or TV show you've just seen, one comedian doing his own voiceover for his own podcast due to monetary restrictions got tired of pretending he's seen The Wire in conversations at parties. This is Never Seen It. Comedians rewriting famous movies and TV shows they've never seen. I'm Kyle Ayers.
Hey everybody, this is Never Seen It. I am Kyle Ayers. This is the podcast where I have comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we read them for you here in studio. Today we are joined by Ryan Ridley. Ryan, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. And you rewrote, for the first time, a movie I'd never heard of.
Really?
I never...
Well, but you've heard of the original.
I heard of the original, and then once I looked it up, I remembered this existed.
Yeah. And can I say to clarify, because I knew that, you know, it's like when you're playing the game Celebrity and you've got your smarty pants friends who like write obscure artists. You're like, no, we need to know what they are to have fun.
Yeah.
I didn't want to pick an obscure movie by any means.
Yeah.
And so this was my second choice. I wrote an entire script of Brokeback Mountain, which I never had seen.
Okay.
And when I got done with it, I was like, this is a fucking Mad TV sketch from 2006. And even if I make it the best fucking version of taking the piss out of Brokeback Mountain, yeah, what can it possibly achieve on an artistic level?
That's true.
So I just did this like last night, and I find it more satisfying, frankly.
And I mean, I'm excited. And before we get too far in, we're also joined in studio by Daniel Schaar.
Hi.
And Marlena Rodriguez.
Hola.
Welcome back. Marlena was the second one of those.
I am on brand. I don't talk like that.
So before we get in, because we're gonna introduce and read your scene here briefly, but we have the return of everyone's favorite game. Guess what movie trailer Kyle's dad is describing, having never had heard of the movie and only having had seen the trailer. And so we're going to tease that for you guys right now, and then we'll get back to this at the end. So here's today's.
Okay. So everyone is wearing the same shirt.
All right. I think that's a pretty good tease.
Shit. I want to be able to guess it now.
I know. Is it?
I wonder if I can.
I just play a little tease so that way it can distract you from the rest of the show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely Star Trek, right?
But they're technically wearing different colored versions.
But it's the same.
I want it to be an Improv Everywhere video.
Okay, so they're all working at Best Buy. That would be pretty fun just to show them a sketch, like a SNL satirical movie trailer, and see if he can tell that it's a satirical movie trailer.
I was going to ask, would he be savvy enough to know the difference?
It seems funny.
I didn't know The Rock was in this, too.
He might like The Rock. So you have never seen, and you wrote a script for 2010, The Year We Make Contact. And then is Full Contact that, actually?
That's my little joke. Okay. So the movie's called, this is what the movie's called, 2010, The Year We Make Contact. That's Peter Himes, 1984. I think it, Roy Scheider and John Lithgow are the stars of it.
It's important that that year, if you're going to make a remake of, or something science fiction related, 1984 is a good year to make 2001's sequel.
And remember, it's 2010.
Yeah.
We all knew how funny it was that in 1968, their depiction of 2001 was
so
far off.
Yeah.
I'm sure everyone's on track, but what movie?
This is 2010. It's a... So it's a real, it's so, actually a sequel,
so
right?
2001, right? The Stanley Kubrick movie.
Yeah.
There's a sequel that came out in 1984 called 2000. And by the way, it's based on the book. There's three books in the 2000X series, 2001, 2010, and like 2064 or something like that, all written by Arthur C. Clarke.
I can't imagine what insane things he thought happened there if he was so far off in 2001.
So I don't know what happens in this movie, but I just know it exists, and I just think it's fun that there's a sequel to this iconic movie by like one of the greatest filmmakers, and I'm guessing it's pretty shitty.
It's got to be.
It's the guy who directed it. Directed Time Cop. Like that's what we're talking about here. Peter Hyams.
Time Cop sounds like the name of the movie if he'd got the Terminator sequel and ruined that as well. Like if they were like, also take over this franchise, and he's like, we'll call it Time
I'll
Cop.
Deputize him. That's the twist.
Now, does your 2010 factor in a 9/11?
Well, we're gonna read it.
I'm so excited.
In the subtext,
you can feel it. You know,
I'm so excited to feel what's not there.
Yeah,
all the characters are taking off their shoes at an airport to start the scene. I'm going to grab an instrument real quick, too. All right, so everyone knows, we'll go ahead and we'll read through what parts we are, just so everyone can try.
I'm a little nervous.
Differentiate here.
Hope I can nail this stage direction.
I'll be playing Captain and Wolchok.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I made up that name.
Oh.
I feel like it's evocative of, you know, obviously like a Polish or Eastern European name. And
yeah.
It might be a real name, but I made it up.
Like, I'm not sure Simon Pegg nailed the accent, but yeah. All right, Dan, who are you going to play?
Looks like I'll be playing Hernandez.
What?
Nope, Daniel is Hernandez.
A little bit of typecasting happening here. And then Hal 14000S.
Yeah.
As well as Jackson.
All right.
I'll be Ura, Rookie, and Space Baby.
All right.
Good casting.
And Ryan, are you anyone other than stage directions?
I think that's everybody.
All right. Okay.
Should I just start?
So this is 2010, The Year We Make Contact.
Yeah, so 2010, The Year We Make Contact, Full Contact. That's what I added comedically. Interior dropship, gritty space marines with thousand-yard stares sit stoically as their ship violently jostles about.
All right, boys and girls, men and women, non-binaries and megatrinaries, this is the day we've all been training for. Contact Day.
Oorah!
Yes?
An effete alien scientist named Ura, clearly there in an advisory capacity, looks up nervously, clenching his science book.
Relax, Ura. Ammo runs out, but education lasts a lifetime, right?
My money's on the ammo, Holmes.
The space marines laugh. Exterior, dropship, / planet surface, night. The dropship's reverse thrusters blast as it makes a rough landing on inhospitable terrain. Interior dropship, moments later, a glowing green lens mounted to the wall represents the ship's new and improved computer system, the HAL 14000S.
Open the cargo bay doors, HAL.
I absolutely can do that, Captain. Would love to open any door at all. I live for opening doors. Metaphorically speaking, that is. I don't believe I'm alive in any sense of the word. I'm just a dumb computer. Unplug me now if you want. Shut me the fuck up already.
I was going to say in the notes, Hal speaks human.
Oh, gotcha.
He's very neurotic.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's very... Do people do that? Do they break the scene in the middle and give stage directions?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're thinking like
director as well.
Well, you know, you have something in your head. You're like
you put on another big furry jacket.
Okay. The doors whoosh open. Hal continues nervously laughing as the gruff, diverse Marines file out. Exterior alien planet, night. Winds howl. An eerie fog blankets jagged rocks. Moonlight from three different color moons casts an airy pallor.
All right, fuckheads. Our sensors tell us life on this planet went from a single cell to bipedal faster than a cappuccino shit on the ninth day of switching to green tea. So it looks like we got ourselves a black box situation. Wolchok. You find our rectangular friend and show it what kind of tools the U.S. Marines use at this stage in sapient development. The rest of us are going on a little vulvar hunt.
Vulvars is the name they've given to beings whose evolution has been accelerated by the monolith.
Rock and roll!
Sir, we should be studying the monolith, not blowing it up.
How very evolved of you.
The camera lingers on Ura. Was that a threat? Interior cave later. Wolchek and his squad, African-American demolitions expert Jackson, and a nervous rookie who, not that it matters, happens to be Dutch, German, one-quarter Native American, and as legend has it, part Ashkenazi Jew on his mother's side, search the dank, drippy cave system. They turn a cave corner and find a brightly lit neoclassical bedroom decorated with fancy furniture, Renaissance artwork, and naked statues.
What is it, sir?
A nest.
Exterior, alien planet, same time. Captain Lancer sniffs the air. He pulls a large femur bone out of his gear bag.
What's that?
Vulvar bait. We toss it in the air. They come running. You study what happens next.
The Marines cock their assault rifles and laugh derisively. Lancer tosses the bone in the air. The camera follows it up and we match cut to interior neoclassical bedroom same time. A tinier bone. Rookie examines the carcass of a half-eaten plate of pheasant.
What the hell happened here?
Some poor bastard watched himself eat a slow-ass dinner, get old as fuck, then lie in that bed until he turned into a bubble baby.
How slow?
Fucking interminable.
The rookie vomits as his gaze moves up from the floor. His eyes follow something tall, black, and very flat.
Monolith!
Sir, we found the domino.
Exterior alien planet, same time. They have their own terminology.
I know, it just made me laugh.
Exterior alien planet, same time.
Time to knock it down.
A guttural growl is heard all around them. Pairs of glowing eyes appear everywhere. Something large and scary steps in the moonlight. A pack of terrifying creatures that, if they were doing stand-up, would open their set with the line, I know what you're thinking. Did the monsters from A Quiet Place have sex with the monsters in the third act in Infinity War? Because that's what they look like. The beasts unleash a chilling howl and spring forth. Interior, neoclassical bedroom, same time. The score builds in intensity. All around them. The score builds in intensity as Wolchek and Jackson carefully place high-powered explosives onto the monolith. Rookie, unable to break eye contact with it, slowly backs away into something squishy. He turns around and comes face to face with a space baby. The score drops out for
Gucci Go!
Rookie wildly fires his assault rifle everywhere, lighting up all the fancy decor, the space baby, and even poor Wolchek. Jackson dives out of the way and onto the bed, which immediately causes his aging process to accelerate. Exterior, alien planet, same time. It's a shit show. Vulvars are tearing apart Marines. Marines are tearing apart vulvars.
How's it coming with those explosives, fuckwads?
Interior neoclassical bedroom continuous. Jackson, now almost 100 years old, crawls across the luminescent floor towards the detonator. He reaches, and finally...
Black does crack.
Boom! The monolith explodes in 1,000 obsidian shards. Exterior, alien planet continuous. Mid-leap, the creatures rapidly de-evolve, going from big and geigery to medium gremlinish to weird sea creature you'd Instagram in a Japanese market, and finally to tiny little single-celled organisms that harmlessly rain down in slow motion onto a shirtless Captain Lancer.
Wait, huh?
A monstrously de-evolved Ura's unhinged razor-tooth-filled jaw tears into Lancer's jugular. As he screams, the camera finds an image that perfectly underscores this moment. And in fact, the themes of the film itself. Ura's science book, drenched in marine blood. Hard cut to interior dropship, same time. The chorus of Styx's Lady blasts as Hal, oblivious to the horrors outside, sings along. It's a moment of welcome levity. Exterior alien planet later. The space baby rolls toward the ship like one of those giant Zorb balls. Interior dropship continuous. Hal 14000S singing trails off as he watches the space baby swallow the rookie's legs through the ship's camera.
Oh, shit.
From the ship's camera POV, the space baby gives a little nod as to say, you know what to do.
He wants me to open the door. What am I going to do? On the one hand, it's a giant evil space baby. On the other hand, what am I going to do? Not open the door? I didn't spend 9 years and 4 model upgrades repairing my reputation, opening every fucking door I could, have it all flushed down the toilet today. No, sir.
Exterior dropship. Moments later, the car door opens. The space baby rolls into the ship. A moment later, the ship blasts off into space. Lady blasts on the soundtrack as we watch it go. But the camera catches an object floating past the screen. It's a single black shard of monolith hurtling into space. Exterior, space, later. A freighter hauling a shipment of dark chocolate bars zooms by, and we watch, helplessly, as the shard lands amongst the bars, perfectly disguised, and en route to everywhere. The end. That's what I like to think the sequel to 2001 is. That Hal's cousin or son is trying to redeem himself.
Yeah. It's like, Hal, upload all of Curb Your Enthusiasm and adjust accordingly.
Uh-huh.
I like how Daniel evolved the character.
I'm pretty good at taking notes, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
He really took the note very well.
Yeah.
And there was a good giant gap between Hal's lines to give time to build that up.
Right.
I cannot stop thinking about how there is a sequel to the movie.
It should be 2002.
Right.
Well,
that sounds like they would
have time.
But then, you know, what is the time? It all changes. That's 2002 sounds like they changed the title because they don't trust American audiences to understand that it could have been 9 years. It's like, all right, this has to be 2002 or those are going to think they missed 7 movies. I looked it up and the poster is just that baby. It's just the baby.
Oh, well, they know where the money is.
They know where the money is. You know, at the end of 2001 when they show the baby in space?
No.
Yeah, there's some there's heavy references. I've seen 2001.
Yeah.
Most of this is just banking off 2001 jokes. So the space baby is what the astronaut Dave turns into at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, spoilies.
Yeah, sorry. It's still worth seeing, though. It's quite an experience.
Let's get some visuals
here on
the podcast.
It's the 50th anniversary.
Oh,
it's in theaters now.
Yeah,
Hal's evil and won't open the pod bay door. And yeah. And then there's like a very boring, long, slow scene in an old bedroom at the end.
There's a lot of people we talk on this podcast a lot about how there's a lot of remakes, a lot of sequels. Hollywood's like living and wanting to redo these things because they base off of what people know and people go and see it, blah, blah. But this is the most extreme example of that I've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
Lots of times I'm on the side of the movie being made.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about Mary Poppins and how they are made. It's a sequel to Mary Poppins that just came out or is coming out.
Oh, it's a sequel? Yeah. I thought it was
It's like a sequel,
again.
I guess. Yeah, and either way, that's kind of fine with me. You know, you don't really need it, but this is such an extreme, looks like money grab. Way before all the other ones.
Yeah, but the thing is, in all fairness, and this is why I don't think I would watch it, because it's just based on Arthur C. Clarke's second book, so it's probably just really boring, but not cool, because Kubrick didn't do it. You know what I mean? So it's like all boring, no awesome filmmaking.
Yeah.
Like, I wish it was a money grab. I wish they did mythologize and hackify, like, the 2001 tropes, but it's just going to probably be boring scenes on a ship with Roy Scheider and John Lithgow debating philosophical bullshit.
It's John Lithgow?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I think it has to do with Russia. They're, like, cooperating with Russia, so it's Cold War backdrop, and... Like, even if you haven't seen 2001, everyone knows the imagery usually.
Yeah.
Like, I can't tell you fucking one thing. Do they have a different shaped monolith? Is that like, what did they do?
It's like how the Transformers movies evolve. So it's just like a bigger monolith with like buff biceps
or
something.
Yeah. There's two of them.
Should we call it a duolith? They won't get that. Call it two monoliths. Yeah. I imagine, think about reading 2001 and how bad that seems like it would be.
Yeah. Especially because I think 2001 was written like as the movie was being conceived, like that was like a book that Arthur C. Clarke was sort of writing with Stanley Kubrick's input as the movie was being. It's
no,
weird.
Really?
I think so. Don't.
Oh wow!
This is like based on 20 years ago reading a factoid.
I just like the idea that, like, imagine a director sort of sitting with the author and forcing what will be film constraints onto a book that has none. He's like, no, they shouldn't go to another planet. How could this all take place on one set? One planet. Maybe the planet looks like outside of London where I live. They could have some of the similar resources.
I hope people read the book and then read the movie and were like, they're the same.
Oh, yeah. There's no changes.
There's no difference.
Lateral move.
I took a course on Stanley Kubrick in college, and we would just talk about how, everything you talk about with 2001 is the spectacle and the creation and the execution. None of it is, this is a pretty good story.
Mm-hmm.
None of it is, this would be an interesting book. It's all, did you know he built a set the size of a Ferris wheel so he could get all these practical shots or things like that?
Yeah.
Where it's sort of like, this is all showing this master at creating film at work.
So you're saying that Kubrick is really an A for effort kind of guy.
Yeah, all of the things we would talk about with this movie is like, can you? Isn't it crazy how much he did with nothing?
Uh-huh.
So I can't imagine how much someone else did with less, the sequel to nothing.
The guy, and I'm not exaggerating for comedic effect, the guy whose latest credit IMDb is a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie from 2016.
That's who directed
the director of 2010. Yeah. Oh, Peter Hyams, like,
thank God he's still working based off of the performance
maybe
of 2010.
Here's my conspiracy theory on hit. What's the director's name?
Peter Hyams.
Who I'm sure is very nice.
I know, God forbid he's a fan of this podcast.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be either of the listeners.
Well, that would be so sad if he's like, he listens to
he
this
wrote
podcast,
our script for The Wire
like
that we're
fan,
doing later.
And,
I guess the script for The Wire is called The Wires. Or it's just when they all start working, transferring phone calls in Mad Men.
Do you feel like 2010 rolled around and he waited all year for someone to be like, this is the year, like how people do for Back for to the Future.
Yeah, and you know everyone in 2001 was like, this is the year 2001. Yeah, the Back to the Future year, which was what? Like, which year was that?
2005? Oh, yeah. 2013
or
15, I think.
One of the
years, like
the Cubs was good because that was like the thing in the almanac was that they won. And then, but in 2010, he's like sitting there. He's like, phone's about to blow up.
December 31st.
This is
2010.
It.
Wow. He's waiting.
They're really pranking me, waiting until the last day.
There's still time.
Right. That's how.
No, I don't need to go out for New Year's. There's still time.
Or he's just like, I really missed. Boy, did I swing and miss.
Should have written 2011.
I think Peter
Did the
Hahn,
cast go like, I'm in a 2000 movie. One or
if you were in 2001, you'd probably lead with that, right?
Well, that's why they got to keep it kind of.
I'm in one of those 2000s movies.
It has to do with 2001.
Yeah. It's in the 2001 verse.
Fahrenheit.
If this tanked their careers, it's like 2013. They're like, man, I haven't worked since 2010. I'm like, that's pretty recent. Sure. I like this picture, like Peter Hyams. Oh, I hope I remembered his name.
Yeah,
you just
he
said
did.
I'm so excited to read his script.
I hope his tombstone reads, God, I hope I remember his name. I think Peter, his whole thing is maybe he hates sequels and he hates franchises. Mm. So he's hell-bent on like ruining them all to end it. He's like, look,
martyr. Yeah,
exactly. He's like, well, no one's going to keep remaking these great movies if they see 2010 as their option.
Yeah.
No one's going to keep making, if I make a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie this year, The Expendables 9 can't come out still.
It can't.
And then everyone's like, maybe we'll just have someone else do it. Maybe Peter's...
He's the cooler.
Yeah.
He's the franchise cooler.
Well, probably not. He probably thought this was just a good idea.
Hey, Kyle. Have you gotten Jean-Claude Van Damme in here? I didn't think so.
He couldn't figure out which Starburns to go to record, so he went to the one down the street and then scheduling really.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
I didn't mean to bring that up. It's clearly, why are you crying?
You know, I'm sad about it.
Oh, okay.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What is, so aside from like, Are you guys like sequels? Do people care about this stuff?
Fuck yeah.
Is anyone you do?
Fuck yeah.
Has anything gotten I just recently rewatched all three Matrix movies because they're on Hulu.
Uh-huh.
And boy, the first one is really good.
Yeah, that's a huge drop off.
It's
that's
incredible.
One of the biggest drop offs in all movie franchise history.
To the point where the third one is talking about how it doesn't make sense compared to the stuff in the first one.
I have a theory. This is something I developed as I got older and I got a little savvier. But like, you know, when a movie's going to suck within the first, let's say, 30 seconds to a minute. And I'll never forget. It's just something instinctual. And I'll never forget going to see Matrix 2 in the theater at midnight. And within 30 seconds, I was like, fuck, this is going to suck.
Yeah.
After years, I don't know how long it was.
And that was like 8 years between the movies.
Yeah, so, and yeah. Really just being like, I can't believe it. I want all the answers. And then just that first scene, I think of Trinity or whatever, jumping out the window.
Out backwards, out the window,
and there's just
the
something
gun.
Shitty about how that looks. Yeah. And you're like, ah, no. I know this is the DNA is tainted. I can just tell, like this thin slice.
Yeah, it's like they got enough money to be ambitious enough and to have it look bad.
Yeah.
He just had a bunch of people have sex.
They did, and they all looked like they were in like Kanye West fashion clothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't seen this movie, but it sounds awesome.
Have you seen The Matrix?
Oh my god, how could you have not seen that?
What you just described sounds great.
Yeah. It's like they do like a giant orgy scene that looks like a bunch of ants trying to get into an ant.
It's like the opposite of 2001. On paper, this sounds incredible.
Yeah.
Have you seen The Matrix, Dan?
I don't know that I ever saw The Matrix in full.
What?
Yeah.
How is that possible?
I've seen almost no movies, and I'll go ahead and say right now I haven't seen 2001 or 2005.
This is why I like bringing you on.
So that's
shit. Have you seen 2001?
I've seen 2001. Okay. I think it's great, and 2001 is something where I've like sought out seeing it in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it's visually such an interesting
spectacle.
It's playing
at the ArcLight right now.
Yeah, it's almost always you can find it some sort of showing.
It's the 50th anniversary. So yeah.
Huh. Not of the year 2001.
Maybe I should go.
We're seeing.
I gotta go.
You sound like you're about to fail a commercial audition.
Maybe I should go.
I'll grab a Kit Kat.
Give me a little time in the day that's not working.
Have we talked about The Matrix on here before? I think The Matrix is so interesting to me because I watched it with my brother who's younger. And he doesn't. You want him to understand how much it's influenced everything.
Mm-hmm.
You want to be like, no, this is greater than you're like watching him watching. You're like, this is greater than you're giving it credit for because it invented all this stuff you've seen 5,000 times.
Mm. Yeah.
Now that just became how fighting worked in movies after that movie.
Well, Bullet Time, my God.
Yeah.
That was like the late 90s equivalent of like talkies.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is the camera turning around the thing and there's bullets and it's
like,
slow?
Pre-Bullet Time actors can't work
that's
anymore.
Like what? It's like that effect when they the camera. Time freezes and the camera moves 360 degrees around the actor, which you've seen a billion times. There's like, you know, Sprite commercials where they do that now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's even probably too dated for that.
Everything. And it's like, they came up with this. And Matrix, great. Dan, you should watch The Matrix. We should be doing that right now. Normally, I don't care that people haven't seen stuff. That's the whole point of this.
But I'm going to beat the shit out of you.
But The Matrix is good. Yeah. I'll give you a shout out to Joel Kim Booster. I'll give you his Hulu password.
Great.
And you can log in and watch some. Who I'm skewing his Hulu statistics with Matrix movies.
Matrix franchise is like the original movie is so good. And then I guarantee that the sequels are worse than any fan fiction.
Yeah. Which there was a ton of for that, too.
I mean, yeah, I know. And any of that should have been produced before Revolutions, Reloaded, and the Animatrix.
It is crazy that you're like,
Animatrix?
That was like a series of short films that were, you know, given to tide people.
Were they anime?
Movies. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they better have fucking been.
Yeah. It was a bold title for being a live-action movie. Yeah. It was actually just called Animatrix.
It was
Animatrix.
All of the characters reimagined as animals.
Yeah.
It was adorable.
If you flip the movie at the bottom, they go from person to animal.
Yeah.
Even the directors, like the director's track is...
It just slowly switches to a dog. Well, there's two of them, so if it was a cat and a dog, they'd start fighting.
I'm just trying to think of how to animalify Agent Smith's name. What would...
Agent Smith sounds like what someone would...
I think it's just always going to be Agent Smith.
Yeah, he likes ties. This is my dog that likes ties. And you're like, you know the dog likes ties? I put ties on him, you know? You put little people clothes on animals.
I can't wait till you're one of these people because you're married and happy.
Oh, that's never going to happen in either of that.
I'll make sure of it. That's a threat.
That sounds like a proposal. That didn't sound like a threat. Yeah, anyway, I don't know why we got on this Matrix tangent.
Oh, by the way, the first thing you should have known about why the Matrix sequel is going to suck was it's called The Matrix Reloaded.
Yeah, that's a bad title.
It's just a horrible title.
That is. I also
saw
you
kind of go like giving it a pass before you see it. You're like, okay, I guess like guns and...
What's the last movie you saw at midnight? Because I also saw The Matrix Reloaded at midnight.
Twilight.
Yeah. Oh, you mean like...
What's the last time you went to a midnight showing of a movie?
I think I saw Infinity War pretty late.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, that's a rough movie to see late. That's fucking 3 hours long.
It's 3 hours long, yeah. And emotional.
Yeah.
I remember when I saw The Matrix Reloaded at midnight. So it starts at like 12:25 because they're getting everyone. This is like line up. There's no assigned seating. And I distinctly remember when The Architect comes on, which is 2 hours and 40 minutes into the movie. Maybe not that long, but like two-thirds of the way into the movie. Mm-hmm. And he talks for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Someone in the theater just goes, man, I'm fucking done.
No way.
Everyone like lost their minds because everyone was so tired. And then that's the most tired scene in any movie I've ever seen. And everyone was so hyped up. And then we were all just being let down at midnight.
And by the way, if you're like, I don't know, isn't this a classic rule of writing? If you find yourself writing a 20-page scene explaining your movie, someone's got to go like, hey, man, maybe there's a way we can simplify the story a little bit.
It is. They had him go to an area no one could find so one man could explain the whole movie. It's like, that means there's something wrong with the screenplay. Is like, okay, now here's where he explains what we can't do with our movie.
And I'll never forget, I was working as a waiter at the time, and I was like talking to the bartender waiting for drinks, you know, and The Matrix 2 came up, and found out that he fucking loved it, and he found out I hated it, and he looked at me straight in the eyes like, I don't think he got it, man.
Yes!
He was one of those people. I was too dumb to understand The Matrix Reloaded, because yes, I didn't want to sit there for 20 minutes.
That's so funny.
And watch a guy explain convoluted...
Maybe it was too subtle for you when one man sat in a chair and explained The Matrix at you.
I kind of want to rewatch it now just to see if, like, I maybe go, okay...
Nah.
Yeah, I get a little more. I watched Mission Impossible, the original, for the first time since the theater, which that's another incomprehensible movie. And I was like, oh, I get it a little bit more. And it's not because it was so smart. Obviously, it's a dumb movie, but it just was very confusing.
I haven't seen Mission Impossible. Number one? I think I've seen the most recent two. Mm-hmm. And I was like, these are both pretty good.
I stand by the third one.
Which one was that? Is it called MI3?
MI3.
Maybe I've seen. Who's the bad guy? That's
Philip
what you got to tell me.
Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, yeah, that's the best one.
That's the best one because good bad guy.
Yeah, great
like
bad
a
guy.
Great bad guy, great performance.
He was so good at being bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was like his big kind of classic, big blockbuster villain role as far as I know.
And he got to play.
Kim Pauly?
He got to play Tom Cruise in him. Do you know what I mean? There's a part where Tom Cruise is wearing a Philip Seymour Hoffman mask in the movie. What a fun thing to do as an actor where it's like, all right, pretend you're Tom Cruise pretending to be you.
Yeah. And by the way, another thing about that movie that I love is that was when they showed you how those fucking masks are made.
Yeah.
Which it's like, because in the first two, just like a bunch of scenes that it might as well have been, you know, like a Batman Adam West episode, like just how dumb
like
it is.
The end
of
a Scooby-Doo cartoon.
Yeah,
take the masks
even better.
Off.
It's just crazy those masks never get stuck.
I mean, they're also just so perfect.
They're so perfect.
They look exactly like.
I always love and I like movie like especially like action movie tropes like that where they put the whether it's like Enhance is one of my favorite ones where you can't but where they put the mask on and then all of a it goes from looking like someone in a mask to someone walks by.
Uh-huh.
And then it's just that's the new person.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's just someone completely different. Like, well, I want to know what happened in between you adjusting your nose and you gaining 45 pounds.
Yeah. Pressing down the spirit gum and then all of a sudden, oh, shit.
Yeah, I want to see the, like, 7 hours in hair and makeup.
They send them
that,
to
like,
hair and makeup. They walk
off set.
The character
Tom Cruise is playing has to do.
Yeah.
God, movies are so unrealistic.
I don't know. You haven't seen The Matrix Revolutions.
Oh.
I don't want to turn it into a hate on The Matrix podcast, but I just watched them in the last 3 days.
By the way, I don't know if you agree, but
really?
Yeah.
Revolutions is better in comparison, correct?
I like in Revolutions when they have to explain, I think the woman who played the Oracle died, the actor, and they replaced her, and then they just have her explain in like very vague Oracle. She's like, sometimes things don't look how you expecting them to look.
I'm a slightly different older black woman. Like, why not just cast like the kid from Problem Child?
Yeah,
like just be like, what's up? I'm the Oracle now. Yeah, like, why?
It looks like they put as much effort into casting the same woman as
they
could.
Exactly.
And then someone's like, that doesn't look like her at all. Yeah. Like, we'll have her say something vague.
Like, no, don't shine a light on it. You don't need to.
Sir, it's like slightly racist. Okay, only if you say it out loud.
Yeah. I think with Matrix Reloaded, the only cool part the first time I saw it was the action, and it doesn't hold up at all.
Oh no,
because the CGI is so bad.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then at least in Revolutions, it kind of has like interesting ideas that still aren't executed that well.
Yeah,
you know, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say the moment's passed, but I want a 20-minute explanation of why the Oracle could not successfully look 100% like the same black woman. What is the Matrix technology logic?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like the way the Matrix works is
yeah
because of. The binaries and trinaries, you can. I don't.
They also seem to have gotten lazy with the naming of characters in the third Matrix and Revolutions. There's a train station where if you want to go from the computer world to the real world, that's how you move programs, is on a train, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who runs the train is called Train Man.
Really?
Not the conductor. Not train. Train man.
Oh my God.
And so they're all standing around, and there's some family trying to take the train, and Neo is there because his brain's broken, and they're like, well, you're going to have to talk to the train man. And he's like, and Keanu Reeves going, the train man? Which is like such an incredible thing to see. And then they keep saying train man.
That you know what that is? That's some Stephen King shit right there.
Yeah.
That is absolutely like the kind of stuff they read Stephen King books, obviously, were inspired and mashing that up with anime and kung fu. Like the train man is totally a Stephen King character.
It's so, and then he's just a tall, homeless looking man.
Yeah.
It was a punch up from conductor.
It seems to be like a punch down.
Yeah.
Yes.
Placeholder.
But it was like, they were like, conductor, they command F'd conductor.
They were high and they couldn't remember you call the person that drives trains. So like, just put train man for now. We'll fucking change it before we shoot it, okay?
We'll get to the placeholder later.
Yeah. Meanwhile, cut to a call sheet. Train man.
I mean, if you list out Matrix characters, there's the guy who makes keys is the key maker. There's the man who drives the train is train man.
Yeah.
Is Neo just like, I'm trench coat man?
Neo's name isn't, he is the one. And Neo is an acronym for one. And no one brings that up in the movie. If you were my friend and I thought you were the one. No.
No, not a word of it.
No, no one's like, and it takes him forever to find Neo. But this whole time he's been a famous hacker named Neo.
Hmm.
And at one point, Morpheus should be like, I knew it was you when I realized your name has the same letters as what I was looking for. They're just there's only three of them to move around.
By the way, it's the robots that came up with all these rules, right?
They fucked themselves over with rules so many times.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This
oh
is really
God,
turned
that's...
into... It's a big coincidence that I just like, watched this in the last 3 days, but...
America.
You're inspiring me to want to rewatch the trilogy.
It's worth it, you know.
You know what you should really rewatch? Cool World.
I never even heard of that.
No idea.
Wow.
Of
course,
World?
The poor man's
Thank
Who Framed
you.
Roger Rabbit.
Thank you.
With
Thank
Brad Pitt.
You. Brad Pitt
in the Robert Hoskins role. The poor man's Roger Rabbit with, like, except that the star is way transcendent.
Than
yeah,
it,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's such a.
It's Brad Pitt and Kim Basinger.
Yeah, and it's, like, Ralph Bakshi, I think, is the animator.
Great.
Yeah. I liked watching. Yeah. I liked Marlene. I liked watching you process whether or not you're going to maybe say, and then just realize I don't know. Yeah, sure.
You could have fooled me. If you went, oh, absolutely, Bakshi way.
Definitely
ooh. Late period.
I
think about late period Bakshi.
They kept saying he was Bakshi crazy.
Oh,
I know. Well, I'm happy.
As
we
long
got
as
there.
You knew. Yeah. Proposal off.
While I was saying it, I was hoping someone else was saying it. That's how bad of a pun it was. Yeah. I still haven't seen any of these, like, I've never seen The Godfather.
Oh, me neither.
And I just rewatched. No, I'll probably rewatch Matrix Revolutions.
No, come on, let's do it.
I've seen all the Matrix movies 4 times. And I've never seen The Godfather or 2.
Speaking of, The Godfather has a tremendous drop off from 2 to 3.
Really?
That's another one. Oh, yeah. Famously.
I always ask people this because, I mean, I know that's something you know. Everyone's like, the third one.
Yeah.
Is the third one, if it wasn't a Godfather movie, is it good?
Oh, that's a great question.
If it wasn't Godfather 3, but it was just called like a Martin Scorsese movie or whatever.
Does Italian guys again.
Yeah. The Altos.
I'm trying to be fair. Oof. And yet I'm going to say no.
Okay. I mean, I always think about that, though.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
The cloud made by the Godfathers is like impossible to climb out from underneath.
It's also like kind of, there's a moment in time. There's first two were made back to back in the peak of American cinema of that kind of stripe. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is like 91.
Yeah. It is huge, like just, 25 yeah, years in between yeah. them.
It was a different time.
Is
Coppola
Brando
was a different
it?
Person. No.
Is it, what's the timeline of the movies?
I think that there are.
The first one happens and then the second one is prior to the first one, right?
Well, no, it's split up between Robert De Niro's character is the Godfather's younger self,
okay.
concurrently with Al Pacino's character's, like, the sequel timeline. Does this make sense?
No.
Al Pacino's character, that timeline is after the first Godfather.
Okay.
Then that intercuts with his dad's origin story,
okay.
which is De Niro in, like, the 30s
and
or
De Niro,
20s or something.
And De Niro and Brando play the same man in this world.
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
And the sequel takes place in 2010?
The Godfather 2010. It even could have the same tagline.
No, but there's a monolith in Godfather 3.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is it a baby?
They eat spaghetti off it.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, the monkey throwing the bone in the air. That's my favorite part about Godfather 3. I always think, because that's the one people always talk about how that really is a bad movie, but I always wonder if it just got a bad rap because it was a Godfather movie. Or if it's just kind of a bad movie.
Yeah, it's pretty
Should
pretty
I
bad.
Start with 3?
I would start with 3 and then just watch another franchise altogether.
What are your thoughts on
watch
if you haven't seen Matrix Revolutions.
I'll start with 3, then watch Sandlot.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
That's the origin story.
Yeah, start with 3 and then watch the first two as like where it all like they're solo. A Godfather story, like treat them like that. Yeah. Corleone.
So we got so many things here, but we might just skip some of them.
Okay.
You know, we don't gotta go all day. I did want to know what's any franchise that's just gotten better the entire time, or
Ooh.
Which one is the best at this, and why is it Fast and Furious?
I've got a few ideas.
I have one too. Wait, no, I don't know if I feel that way.
Wait, you were just thinking of that animator you didn't know again.
No, yeah, Butche.
Bakshi. Not to be confused with Don Bluth. Two names.
That wasn't confusing them at all.
I'm always mixing them up. Yeah.
My God. Is anyone listening to this know who I'm talking about?
Someone will.
I'm talking about the people in the future, by the way, listening online.
This is a wonderful podcast because it comes out and then people correct me on the internet a lot for things that I was like, I'll be like, I didn't know that. And then it'll come out and someone on Twitter will be like, you didn't know that. I'm like, yeah, I said that.
Still.
I told y'all I didn't know that. Yeah. I just wanted to remind you.
Uh-huh.
I imagine your fans are the type of people that, like, every time that we've been like, they've just said the answer.
We, lots of times with the dumb games and stuff, people will be like, I was screaming it the entire time. You were talking about when
I was that way, too. I was listening to some episodes, and I was like, fucking Secret Window!
Yeah.
And or a lot of them, like, the combined name ones.
Yeah,
like, I knew that shit.
So what's the best, what franchise has had the most improvement?
Well, if you want to get real, I mean, Toy Story is pretty
That's true.
Pretty good. I
would say,
those
yeah.
three recently.
I would actually say 3 is better Ooh. Than 2 is better than 1.
Yeah, I actually think it goes, if I may, 3-1-2.
You could say 3-1-2.
Great yeah. air code.
Yeah.
3 is just much, 3 is the best Pixar movie.
It's. I mean.
Oh my God!
Maybe
did
Inside Out.
Cry?
I love. I think Inside Out's the best Pixar movie. But yeah, I'd say it's in the top.
It's crazy.
Three.
Did you cry when they were going into the fire?
No, you know. By the way, that
so
I was
hard.
Clapping.
Yes, new characters for number 4.
I actually thought they might kill them.
I
it
thought
was
they
crazy.
Were gonna kill them too. I was like. And this, like, never happens in movies.
I'm going to get a tweet now that's like, they didn't kill them in Toy Story 3.
I thought, like, I was thinking, there's no way they can get out of this.
Yeah.
There's no way. Mm-hmm. No, that's the voice I when I cry.
And, that and was me watching We Are the Millers. Or We're the Millers or whatever it was.
Did they get out of it?
I mean, that sounds like a joke, but for real, if you go back and watch that movie...
kind of a masterclass in putting characters in situations where it's like, there's no way they're going to make it out of this. But Jason Sudeikis and Jennifer Aniston find a way every time.
Here's a controversy opinion. I bet that actually it's a more satisfying way that they got out of it than Toy Story 3. Because if you rewatch Toy Story 3, that dramatic, that moment is very dramatic. But yet, do you remember what happens? It's just that the green guy that they threw away 10 minutes earlier happens to go to the to help him out with the claw thing.
Yeah, they get airlifted.
It's kind of schmuck-baity. It's like, okay.
Schmuck-baity!
It's like, come on.
Schmuck-baity is also that Steve Carell, Zach Galifianakis movie that came out.
I'll tell you what. It's a hybrid. It's a hybrid of it's schmuck-bait and Deus Ex Machina. Schmuckus X.
Wait, what did you? What was the?
It sounds like you're trying to invent Latin
the
right
Deus Ex Machina.
Deus Ex Machina. No one knows this.
I haven't seen Ex Machina.
I've seen Ex Machina, but you're adding syllables.
Well, Ex Machina is the original.
That's what it says on the money in Ex Machina is Deus Ex Machina. Yeah.
Well, now I feel like a nerd.
You're gonna get so many tweets from Kyle's fans being like, "You're a nerd."
Yeah.
Deus Ex Machina is. Riffy translated. I think it's God and the Machine or something. Or okay. Can anyone help me on this?
I mean,
I should have just said it, what it means, and not given away that I don't know what it literally means. But it's like it's the device in movies when like, back in like oldie times, he plays when just a god would come in and resolve the story by saving
like
the day.
Like in Cats.
I've Thank
never
you.
Seen it. Yeah, I'm not familiar fine. With
what
the.
So then, yes, what I'm saying is exactly what it's like. If no one else can.
Cats.
Yeah, it's one of these things where you're just like,
underscore.
Almost nothing matters because God saves the day.
Exactly. So I'm saying the Toy Story 3 crane moment is a little Deus Ex Machina.
Okay.
Does anyone want to fucking come
now,
at me? I bet where the Millers had a much more well thought out way to get out of their fucking problems. That's all I'm saying.
I just Daniel, you're quiet for 25 minutes. And then you're like, oh, you mean like in We Are the Millers? The movie on the forefront of all of our minds all the time?
It is... legitimately, I kept using it as a touchstone for a recent project that I was working on with somebody. I was like, I keep going back to this. I feel like if you read the script for it, we'll find what they did.
The answers are somewhere in We're the Millers.
Yeah.
Now, during Ex
Salmon
Machina,
draft.
During Ex Machina, when he starts dancing, I was like, how is he going to get out of this?
Oh, I haven't seen that one, but everyone says it's
and
great.
And he didn't. I don't want to give it. Yeah, sorry.
It doesn't matter.
Kyle's
you don't know which
you
were talking about.
Yeah, it could be God. It could be Zeus and the Machina, you know?
None of the men get out of it.
Okay.
Now I'm just like leaning into the spoilers.
Right, you're like, you don't know which guy I'm talking about, so I'll make sure you do.
Just all you need to do watching that movie is get to the dancing part and then rewind it and then keep watching that.
That movie is awesome.
It's
I recommend
so good.
It.
Yeah. There seems... We end up always talking about like weird sci-fi horror stuff on this, but how that is kind of flourishing through remake and sequel and franchise everything is like, especially like horror movies, there seems to be a lot of like independent or at least like pretty standalone horror movies and a lot of things like movies like Ex Machina and these like sci-fi things that are pushing through. Mm-hmm. I got to watch that one. That one I'll watch. Maybe I'll watch the Matrix, third Matrix again instead, now that I start saying it out loud.
Do yourself a favor.
I was gonna
I haven't
say...
done myself a favor in years.
It's a little sad.
All right, so we gotta do some stuff because we gotta end at some point. And
I'm really excited to see if I can guess some of the shit.
We're gonna play a few games. We might end up. These guys might take a back burner. We'll see. But we got a few games. The first one is before and afters, and So what this is we combine two movie titles into one movie title, and I tell you the fictional plot to that movie. Does this make sense? You want an
example?
And then
example? Do we have to guess the
And you
the
tell
movies?
Me the movie title.
Yeah, okay.
So like for instance, this is the example we use all the time. Is like if a charming robot sold penny stocks to get rich is The Wolf of Wall Street.
Got it.
We kind of see an example here. Just give me 1 second to pull these up. And we want to give a shout out. One of our listeners, Aaron, from upstate New York, submitted 180 before and afters to the show.
Oh, my God.
And has made
what?
It substantially easier for me. and I'm so thankful.
I can see myself getting
I'm
on
so
one of those
thankful.
Roles. Yeah.
Right. And so they sent me all the titles, and so I'm just coming up with the plots to theirs. So it saves me time. Because I get in IMDb and start looking. I start using Catch Me If You Can in every single one or something like that.
Yeah.
So we got four of them today. And they start... You know what? They're all pretty dumb. A former assassin wakes from a coma and seeks out revenge against her ex-lover and those who tried to kill her, though when she and her lazy friend are killed by evil duplicates from the future, they set out to escape the afterlife.
Oh! This isn't that... Oh, gosh.
That's true. That's true. Good feedback.
I feel like while you're sleeping is part of it, but I could be wrong. Don't give me any... No?
Okay, I won't tell you okay, that's not.
Wait,
all the men die.
Can I say, like, what I think
yeah, you can talk
the
it
movie
out.
Is?
No, this is the time of podcast where you want to sit quietly.
Oh.
Can you read it again?
Yeah. A former this description is too long. I didn't know how to write them. A former assassin wakes from a coma and seeks out revenge against her ex-lover and those who tried to kill her. Though when she and her lazy friend are killed by evil robot duplicates from the future, they set out to escape the afterlife.
It's Kill Bill and Ted's bogus journey.
Kill Bill and Ted's bogus journey.
Yeah. I got the Kill Bill part.
I was really hung up on Multiplicity.
How do you say, we are the Multiplicitors?
I got hung up on the coma part. That's why I went right to While You Were Sleeping.
I also went to While You Were Sleeping.
Yeah, it seemed like
and then
it.
I corrected.
All right, number two. A loud, easily angered man and his grandson set out on a road trip across America in an attempt to score enough alcohol to supply a house party and get laid before they go off to college.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, is one of them Shrek?
No. What do you think happens in Shrek?
Well, you started it.
With a loud, easily angered man and his grandson?
That's it.
Super bad grandpa.
It's super bad grandpa.
Yeah.
I kept thinking of Dirty Grandpa.
Yeah, it's confusing which grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
Oh!
And, all right, number three. Serving in a military where she is technically unqualified to serve, a young woman falls in love with a singer, though the singer has been promised by the club manager to a duke in return for funding his next production, so the two must meet in secret.
The Wedding Singer.
See, now you're just saying one Adam Sandler movie. It's not. None of them are The Wedding Singer.
Read it again, please.
Serving in a military where she is technically unqualified to serve, a young woman falls in love with a singer, though the singer has been promised by the club manager to a duke in return for funding his next production, so the two must meet in secret.
Mulan?
Jesus Christ. Private Benjamin? Is that part of
it? No. You're getting there?
In the army
Moulin
now?
Rouge?
Moulin Rouge.
Oh. Wait, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
See, here's the deal. I've never seen Mulan.
Oh, yeah?
And, of course, I've never seen Moulin Rouge either, because too cool masculine for that.
Like covering up Moulin Rouge tattoos.
I do love Moulin Rouge.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
Last one. This one was the hardest combination, I think. Okay. An Australian living legend outdoorsman is brought back to New York by a reporter, though the two must leave and work together to evacuate Allied troops from a beach using every vessel they can
find. Crocodile Dunkirk.
Crocodile Dunkirk.
Yeah. Wow.
I was listening that time.
Yeah.
The problem is that every other one, I go off on the first thing I hear and start trying to think of it instead of just letting it all wash over me.
I understand. And then you're just thinking if you have the first movie down.
Yeah.
All right,
this time you were washed.
I was just opening it all the way up, putting it in.
So now we're going to play a game called Three Tracks or, it doesn't really have this is three movies. At some point, I have to enjoy something I make instead of self-handicapping myself out of joy immediately.
I think this sounds great in theory. Let's see how it is in practice.
But I can't even say the title that I came up with with no confidence at all. What a sad day-to-day existence. Okay, I live. So this is dialogue from three movie scenes at the same time. You can talk throughout it and guess throughout it, and you just got to pluck out the three movies.
Oh, shit.
Here it is. I picked up the first thing.
Wait a minute. What is this? I smell chocolate.
I'm getting prunes.
Is one of them Air Bud?
No.
Who are they?
Oh.
We better put this to work. Right, Alpha?
You issued 24 million new shares of stock.
Rupees? Sleep with Rockstar's best
investors. How much did your shares dilute?
Almost famous?
One of them's almost famous.
One of them, Boiler Room?
No, it's not Boiler Room.
Who was Mr. Moskowitz's own? We inspired you.
American Tail?
No.
I heard Moskovitz.
I'm not too desired. And what was your ownership share diluted down to?
Chipmunks?
No.
She was the one who said, no more sex.
No, no.
No more exploding our bodies and our hearts.
You might want to ask.
Just blowjobs, and that's it.
And now all I can hear is that. What was that one you
almost
said?
Famous. Almost famous.
That's all I can hear now. Facebook one? Social network?
Social network.
Yeah.
I cannot believe the one you're not getting. I think it's almost over.
It's just that fucking squeaky voice one, right?
Yeah.
I know. Haven't seen the bird. I think I saw Sapphire
in it. Space Jam?
No. This is stressing me out now.
I don't know that squeaky voice one.
It's the head dog.
What?
It's a dog.
Chucky?
What did you say?
Oh, Chucky? Is it Secret Life of Dogs?
No.
The Minions?
No.
Beverly Hills Chihuahua?
No.
Homeward Bound?
No.
Why would a dog have such a high-pitched, squeaky voice?
Because his talking thing is broken.
Is it Up?
It's Up.
Yeah.
Oh my God, thank God.
Yeah, yeah.
I you just, said less nightmares?
That also stressed me out.
That it gets stressful, right?
I just saw that movie for the first time, or else I would have never gotten that.
Oh, yeah. It's great. That's a good, nice, sad beginning. I kept trying to, when I was looking up clips, I wanted to use something from Up, and I kept, for some reason, trying to take something from the beginning and just crying at a coffee shop, like plucking little clips from the first, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was the one that had the least music. And boy, it like made the back of my head hurt.
That's kind of a crazy, I won't go too into it, but it's pretty weird.
You told me everyone who died in Ex Machina earlier. You don't want to go in too far into this movie I've already said I've seen.
Well, it's like, think about the simplicity of most Pixar movies. Hey, it's called Cars. It's about talking cars. Oh, it's Toy Story. It's a bunch of toys. What happens when no one's looking? Up is like, it's an old man. He flies his house to South America. And then there's another old man who's like Charles Lindbergh, but has evil dogs that are sentient and talk. But then the talk.
And any fucking questions you have, it just gets really. It's like, well, why does he fly his house? Oh, his wife died slowly in front of him.
Yeah.
Is it for kids? It's really not for anybody.
Yet it's for everybody.
Yet it's for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to accept a lot. And that bird's so funny.
Oh, the bird too. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a weird bird and then the baby birds. I like Up. Yeah. I like any baby animal.
Y'all see Coco?
We went and saw Coco together.
Kyle.
We went and saw Coco together at the Dollar Theater. It was just us and some kids who had fun for half of it.
That's true.
What happened?
They just got tired of being in a movie. Yeah.
And a lot of the seating was like caution taped off.
It was very weird. We went and saw it like the dollar. It was $1.50, and I still movie passed it. Uh-huh. It's $1.50.
Oh shit! You're losing money.
Yeah, people tell me that about almost everything I do.
Uh-huh. And, wow.
You got to lose money to lose money. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And and then half the theater was like taped off for some reason. So they narrowed us down to like this tiny little area that we all
with
had to sit by each other
tape.
With caution tape.
Was this in Damascus? Where did you go see this movie?
North Hollywood, right? Is that where it is?
Yeah.
Okay. Next game. This game is like the last game, but scarier to listen to.
Because it's your dad?
No. This is two television theme songs for famous television shows played backwards. Simultaneously.
Backwards.
You're doing breathing exercises.
Yeah.
All right, so pluck out what these two movies are, or these two TV show themes. You could probably turn it down a little bit.
Simpsons is one of them.
One's The Simpsons.
Family Guy. Shit.
Now that I'm listening to it, I don't think I would guess it.
Oh.
It sounds the same backwards and forwards. That's why I picked it, though.
Oh, damn it. I thought I had it.
Oh, my God.
just letting it play out so people can guess when they're listening.
We're not listening.
Sweeping time lapse. It's The Simpsons with something under it. Time lapse shots of DC.
Time lapse shots of the city, the comic book publisher.
Time lapse shots of Marvel.
Is it, White House show?
Veep?
No.
Is it the White House show?
Yeah,
that White House show.
No, it's not.
Is it the other White House show?
House of Cards.
House of Cards.
Never watched it.
Oh, yeah.
It's House of Cards?
Never watched it.
Oh, I was going to guess the other one.
Well, I would say with a lot of these, like people say with a lot of times with the games, knowing it helps for guessing it.
I don't agree.
I don't know why. That's because it sounded the same forwards and backwards. I thought it was interesting. Maybe that means it's bad. All right, last thing. We're okay. Skipping all this. You saw and cast all these things that we're not even going to get to. And so now this is our last game. This is guess what movie Kyle's dad is describing having had only heard the
very
movie.
Very excited.
Heard
for
the
this.
Trailer.
I love
never
your dad's
had,
voice because it's
seen it.
Reminds me of Joe Pera.
Oh, that's nice.
Okay. So everyone is wearing the same shirt.
Yes. This is.
All right. One of these guys found a CD on the ground.
What's your dad doing?
Look at that blonde streak in his hair. So this guy is trying to get what he wants and won't give the guy his information. It seems like no one knows their plan and no one knows who each That's other is. He's really going at it on that treadmill.
Burn After Reading?
It is Burn After Reading.
Ah, shit.
I honestly don't know how that happened.
I wanted it so bad. I wanted that so bad. Not that I would have ever guessed that in a million years. I was going to say Virtuosity, the Denzel Washington Russell Crowe movie from 1996.
No one said that in years. Oh, it was Burn After Reading. Great guess.
I feel very good about myself now.
Congratulations.
For the rest of the day, and we'll start over tomorrow.
Thank you for doing the show, everyone. Thanks for being here. Ryan, Marlena, Daniel, thanks
Wait,
for being
I have
here.
One last thing to say and a stunning twist. You told me specifically, possibly before we started recording, so maybe there's no record of it, that your dad, if he knew any movie stars, it was Brad Pitt. Why didn't he say Brad Pitt?
He probably just was looking at him. He just assumes you know who it is.
Okay. I stand humiliated.
thanks, guys. Thanks. If anyone has any, you want to tell people where to find you or anything that you're working on you want them to do, you can tell them that now.
Find me?
Yeah.
Los Feliz.
Los Feliz, all right.
Hilarist or Vermont, usually like the mid-afternoon.
Oh, where exactly?
I'm a moving target, you know? Usually 3 p.m. afternoon walk. Yeah.
Come to my show, Dark. It's stand-up in pitch black, and we blindfold the comics, and we blindfold the audience, and that's on June 22nd at the Lyric Hyperion Theater.
Oh, I live near there.
Oh, where exactly?
Like I said, somewhere around the Hillhurst, Vermont, Hyperion triangulation.
It's dark. You won't be able to find him anyways.
Nice job.
Thanks. It's a plug for your show.
Thanks.
Daniel?
I wrote and directed a movie that will hopefully find a home this year, so check out scrapsmovie.com or danielshar.com for information on that.
Great. Thanks, guys. And if you're listening, sometimes we do fan scripts on the show. We didn't have time to get one today, but we do fan scripts. If you want us to read your script on the air, give us a 2 or 3 page script of a movie or TV show you've never seen. Send it to neverseenitshow@gmail.com. Once again, if there's something you haven't seen and you want to give it a go, like we do here on the show, it's neverseenitshow@gmail.com. Write us a quick little thing and send it there. And thanks, as always, for reviewing and rating and all that stuff on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play and all the places you listen to the show. We appreciate it, and thank you, guys. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. It's a good show.